At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Alan Norris, President and Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us today for Brookfield Residential's 2014 first quarter conference call. With me today is Craig Laurie, our Chief Financial Officer. I would, at this time, remind you that in responding to questions and in talking about new initiatives and our financial and operating performance, we will make forward-looking statements. These statements are subject to known and unknown risks, and future results may differ materially. For more information on our company, please also visit our website. Our results for the first quarter improved over the same period last year as we benefited from increased home closings and higher average house prices, as well as gains on the sale of commercial assets and our mixed-use developments in Playa Vista, California, and Seton in Calgary, Alberta. For the 3 months ended March 31st, 2014, our net income increased substantially to $25 million, or $0.21 per diluted share, from $4 million or $0.04 per diluted share in the same period in 2013. Our Canadian markets of Alberta and Ontario continue to perform well. Our results reflect a measured sales pace with a higher margin for our land sales, combined with continued growth in our housing operations. We have a strong market share within the energy-focused Alberta market, and in Ontario, we are well-positioned in the low-rise market outside of the downtown Toronto core. As we report our overall results in U.S. dollars, at times we do encounter some variability in our results from our Canadian operations through the translation process and the movement in the relative currency rates over the comparative periods. In the U.S., the recovery of the market continues, albeit at a slower pace than 2013. We continue to have an environment of constrained lot supply, which has resulted in home and land price appreciation in many of our markets. Overall, in the home building industry, many areas of the U.S. have experienced some slowdown in the early spring selling season in comparison to a very strong 2013. While we have seen year-over-year home order growth within Canada, and while our U.S. orders are down, we believe we are still tracking for the year based on our new communities recently added or about to come on stream and normal absorption assumptions going forward. Other highlights of the quarter included the successful opening of Playa Vista, with all three single-family builders opening. We also monetized a 22,700 square foot commercial retail asset in this mixed-use development for a small gain. In Austin, Texas, we gained final approval to begin construction in our second master plan community, Addison, and preliminary approval for the first phase of Easton Park, our third master plan community in this market. We expect to realize lot sales in Addison and Easton Park later this year and in early 2015. In Canada, we opened a community called The Arbors in Aurora, just north of Toronto, Ontario, on February 13th, achieving approximately 100 signed sales contracts in the first 6 weeks of sales. In Calgary, Alberta, we completed the sale of the Phase 1 retail project in our Seton mixed-use development, generating a gain of $32 million. Our land revenue may vary significantly from period to period due to the nature and timing of land sales. Revenues are also affected by local product mix and market conditions, which have an impact on the selling price per lot. Based on current market conditions, we still anticipate that income before income taxes for 2014 will be measurably higher than in 2013. Also yesterday, we announced a normal course issuer bid, or share buyback program, as others may refer to it as, for up to 2 million common shares. We will fund the purchases through our available cash and believe that these purchases are a prudent investment at times when the market price of our common shares may not fully reflect the underlying value of our business and our future business prospects. I'll now pass it over to Craig, who will review the financials.
Thank you, Alan, and good morning, everyone. Our results in the first quarter improved over the same period last year. For the 3 months ended March 31st, 2014, net income attributable to Brookfield Residential was $25 million, or 21 cents per share, compared to $4 million, or 4 cents per share, for the same period in 2013. The increase of $21 million was the result of an $8 million increase in gross margin, primarily from higher home closings, combined with a $33 million pre-tax gain on commercial assets held for sale, and a $1 million increase in equity earnings from unconsolidated entities. This was partially offset by higher sales and marketing costs of $1 million, higher general administrative expense of $5 million, change in the fair value of equity swap contracts and share-based compensation expense of $3 million, an increase in interest expense of $5 million, and an increase in non-controlling interest and other interest in consolidated subsidiaries of $2 million, and an increasing income tax expense of $5 million. Total land revenue is $44 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014, a decrease of $8 million when compared to the same period in 2013. Land gross margin was $21 million, a $7 million decrease compared to the 3 months ended March 31, 2013. This was due to 30 fewer single-family lot sales, partially offset by an increase in multifamily, industrial, and commercial acre sales, and raw and partially finished acre sales. When we look at our operating segments in the first 3 months, land revenue in Canada was $38 million, a decrease of $10 million when compared to the same period in the prior year. This decrease was a result of the mix of land sales, where 87 fewer single-family lots were sold, but were partially offset by four additional multifamily, industrial, and commercial acre parcel sales, and two additional raw and partially finished parcel sales. Land gross margin decreased $9 million when compared to 2013 as a result of lower single-family lot sales in 2014, partially offset by the higher average lot selling price and the mix of land sold. In the central and eastern U.S., we have experienced continued increased activity as revenue and gross margin increased by $2 million, respectively. This was due to an increase of 57 single-family lots sold, primarily in our Denver market, partially offset by a decrease in average lot selling price related to the mix of lots sold. In California, there were no land sales or for the three months ended March 31, 2014, or in the same period in 2013. In terms of our housing operation, housing revenue was $164 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014, compared to $119 million for the same period in 2013. Gross margin increased $15 million as a result of an 18% increase in home closings and a 17% increase in the average selling price when compared to the same period in 2013. Gross margin percentage increased to 23%. For the 3 months ended March 31, 2014, compared to 19% when compared to the same period in 2013. Looking at our operating segments, the Canadian market has shown a steady increase in sales with its backlog units up 8% year over year. Housing revenue in Canada for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014 increased $17 million and gross margin increased $6 million when compared to the same period in 2013. This resulted from a 22% increase in home closings and a 4% increase in the average home selling price for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014, compared to the same period in 2013. The increase in the average home selling price was attributable to product mix, particularly due to Ontario having a higher proportionate share of the increase in total home closings, as our homes in Ontario have a slightly higher average selling price. In California, net new home orders decreased by 44 units. However, we saw a 13% increase in home closings during the 3 months ended March 31, 2014, when compared to the same period in 2013. Overall, our California segment had the largest improvement in housing revenue with $68 million in the first quarter, an increase of $26 million when compared to the same period in 2013. This is due to 9 additional home closings and a 42% increase in average home selling price compared to the prior year period. Gross margin increased $9 million as a result of the increase in the average home selling price, which was driven by product mix of higher priced home closed in some of our San Francisco Bay Area and Southern California communities. In the central and eastern U.S. markets, housing revenue increased $2 million as a result of 3 additional home closings, an increase in the average home selling price. In Denver, we had 13 home closings for the 3 months ended March 31, 2014, compared to no closings in the same period in 2013. In Washington, due to inclement weather, we saw a decrease in activity. Housing gross margin remained flat when compared to the same period in 2013 due to product mix. Moving to our balance sheet, As at March 31, 2014, our assets totaled $3.2 billion. Our land and housing inventory and investments in unconsolidated entities are our most significant assets, with a combined book value of $2.7 billion, or approximately 83% of our total assets. Our land and housing assets include land under development and land held for development, finished lots ready for construction, homes completed, and under construction and model homes. In the first quarter, the increase in our land and housing assets is attributable to acquisitions of $84 million, development activity, and stronger backlog. In terms of upcoming investor events, this month we will be at the following conferences in New York: the Wells Fargo 2014 Industrial and Construction Conference, the J.P. Morgan Home Building and Building Products Conference, and the Credit Suisse 2014 Regional Real Estate and Building Products Conference. We're also planning our first Investor Day in Playa Vista, California on November 19th. We'd like to thank you for joining us in the quarter-end conference call, and we'll now turn the call back to the operator who will moderate questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star and 1 on your touchtone phone. You will hear a tone to indicate you're in queue. For participants using a speakerphone, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing any keys. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. There will be a brief moment while we poll for questions. The first question is from Dan Oppenheim of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. I was just wondering if you want to talk in terms of just what you're seeing, given sort of your involvement in both the land development side and the home building, how you're now seeing the overall environment in terms of demand from the other builders. We look at sort of the land sales during the quarter, which at this level, and then just thinking about sort of over the course of this year, what you're seeing in terms of demand from builders for lots in the communities, and what your expectation would be as we sort of work through the year in terms of just sort of regionally in terms of the land sales and such.
Yeah, morning, Dan. It's Alan here. I think it varies a little bit by region. I mean, I think we have, as you know, we have a number of communities that we are entering into or opening up this year in, say, Southern California. We've had fairly strong interest, and we have we're in the process of negotiating sort of final agreements with most of the builders, and all we have to do is produce the lots in time by the end of the year. So we had good interest from a number of builders in our communities in Southern Cal. Northern Cal is still obviously it's going still fairly solid. Definitely there's been some softening in the Phoenix market, without question. Some builders are doing well in that market, and others are struggling a bit. So I would say that market is definitely softened. In Calgary, in the Canadian markets, we have no real issues at all. The biggest issue, obviously, is just some constraint on supply. We're seeing from builders, we've moved prices up quite significantly in the Calgary market, for instance, because of the constrained supply environment. And so we've got a long laundry list of people wanting to buy lots, to be quite honest, because of that situation. So all in all, I think we're generally tracking. No question, some of the areas of the U.S. it's slightly more sluggish spring selling seasons. We'll see if today's jobs numbers sort of revitalizes a little bit and gives a bit more optimism to the marketplace and kicks people out of kicks the kids out of the basement. But those types of things, I think we're generally feeling okay, albeit it's more tepid than last year, but last year, you've got to remember, was very, very strong that first quarter.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
The next question is from Adam Rudiger of Wells Fargo Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Alan, I think last quarter you we talked about the size of the opportunity for the U.S. operations. You were still talking about it potentially matching Canada in 2015, and you'd said at the time 2014 should be a linear progression to 2015. I was wondering if that kind of guidance or thought was still intact, and if not, what the current status of those expectations is.
Yes, Adam. I think we're still on track. The mix might be a little bit different this year, as I said, just because we are experiencing some of the markets slightly higher margins, and we might, as I say, in the Calgary context, slow down the lot sales just a touch, just because we are dealing with a constrained supply situation, because we are experiencing much higher margins. So we still think that we may be off a little bit on some of the unit stuff, but still make it up on the margin and the income side. So we believe we're still on track on that linear progression between 13 going into 14 on the midpoint, and then 15 on an equal basis between Canada and the U.S. So it's early days for the year, but generally speaking, we think we've got no reason to believe we're not on track.
Okay, and then when the U.S. growth, as you think about that income growing, you know, to match Canada in 2015, how much is it? Should we expect, you know, significant or more community openings for the housing side, or will most of that income generation be from land sales? I'm just trying to get a sense of what your expectations for the size of the U.S. home building operations can or may be.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're gradually trying to get to more home sales in each of the different regions, but, I mean, we're not going to be anywhere close to our what we think our normalized level should be, even by the end of 15. To be quite honest, we think we could be doing 400 or 500 in each of the regions where we do home building operations. But it's really just an ongoing progression of our normal business, to be quite honest. But I don't see us getting to our full potential in 15 by any stretch. But we do believe we'll be getting it. We should be hopeful we're getting equal to where Canada has been over the last several years.
Okay. And then just one question on the buyback. How much of that was a function of maybe reduced or slower, you know, demand on the land side, so looking for a more kind of balanced capital approach to mute the cyclicality, or how much of it was just because you really think the shares were undervalued? I'm just wanting to look.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, we still see some opportunities out there. Don't get me wrong. It's not as if the market has dried up on the land side, but to be quite honest, looking at our share price, which as little as 2 days ago was sitting just below $20, I mean, buying back some shares offers a tremendous return on investment, in our opinion, buying our own land at such a discount. So it was really just a balanced capital approach with respect to still looking at, you know, the appropriate types of deals if they meet our return criteria. But this one, in our opinion as management, was a very easy one because of our knowledge of the assets we own and the pricing that the market has placed on our assets.
Okay. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thank you.
The next question is from Will Rando of Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for taking my question.
Good morning, Will.
Alan, could you provide you did provide some incremental color on the central segment. I was just kind of curious where you're at from a community count perspective and when those margins really start to inflect in regards to, like,
Craig,
in Austin, for example.
I can speak to Austin.
Yeah.
I mean, Austin on the community count, we've got two new communities coming on this year. That will just get us up to three, though, Will. And as you know, we don't have anything. That's just on the land side for Austin at this point, albeit we are looking to enter the housing market, as we've stated in past calls. With respect to the rest of the community count, I don't have the number. Craig's got it right here, I think.
I don't have it by the region, but we obviously have guided that we would expect, including JVs, to go to 57. We're currently at the 53. So that's a net four. I don't have the specifics, but sort of going from memory, I think it was the one or two that Alan mentioned in Central and Eastern, and then I think the remainder were really in California.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there were any in Canada.
And just the second part of that, when do you think the margins really start to pick up there, and what drives it?
On the land side or the housing side, Will?
Kind of both. I'm just kind of curious from an overall margin perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you notice where we are through, I mean, on the housing side for Q1, we're at 23% on the gross overall,
yes.
Which is up 4 points from last year, you know, from 19, shall we say, to 23. I mean, we're looking at our backlog, and we're fairly comfortable that we can be sort of reasonably consistent through the balance of the year. Obviously, we know the inherent leverage on the land side. We know that house prices are moving up just not obviously nearly as rapidly as last year, but we still think even, as you and I have talked about, I mean, even a 3% increase in housing could end up being a 10% increase from a lot perspective, as long as all the other costs remain the same. So I think our guidance with respect to lot margins, we're in that north of 50% in Calgary, north of 40 to 50 in Edmonton, and we are still maintaining 25 to 35%. We believe on average between the Eastern and Central and also in California. So we do have that variable throughout the regions. Some of the ones that we'll be opening this year might be a little bit higher, but on an average that we would still expect them to be in that sort of range.
And then just one follow-up on the normal course bid. I guess in terms of you're buying that stock in the open market, but is a block with Brookfield Asset Management out of the question given how thin the float already is?
This is Will, Craig. So, you know, obviously we would engage a broker, and they would be buying in a normal course through the market. We wouldn't know who the sellers are. We would not do a direct purchase with them. But you know, we should say we've obviously there's a number of rules and laws surrounding the normal course issuer bid, as outlined. It's related in both cases. It's really you're limited to the 25% of the volume weighted average volume. So in our case, based on current volumes, that's you're sort of limited to around 30,000 shares per day.
And Will, just to add one more thing with respect to from a float point of view, I mean, almost as sort of the indirect question you were asking. I mean, we're well aware that, I mean, we've obviously stated in past calls that we want to try and enhance the public float and enhance the liquidity for all shareholders. We just felt that we needed to step up, just based on my earlier comment, that from an actual return point of view, so that is such an oversized return just for buying our own land back, shall we say. Albeit we're not trying to, I mean, 2 million is a sort of a tiptoe into it, just to show that support and that belief in ourselves and our stock, as opposed to having too much of a negative impact on the public float.
Yeah, totally understand. Congrats on the quarter, and thanks for the time, guys.
Thanks, Will. Cheers.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. Next question is from Michael Goldberg of Desjardins Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Morning. First of all, how much do you figure that the difference in your common equity would be if you were reporting under IFRS rather than U.S. GAAP?
Hey, Michael, this is Craig. So in terms of the comparison between IFRS and U.S. GAAP, housing and land is considered inventory in both cases, so there's no mark-to-market. So on a material basis, there wouldn't be a big difference.
Okay. All right. Separate topic. While a benchmark U.S. mortgage rate has increased significantly over the past year, the increase in monthly carry for the same dollar amount of mortgage has been more modest, yet the increase in mortgage rate is said to have held back the U.S. residential market. Do you think the impact has been largely limited to mortgage refi activity? Or have higher mortgage rates and carry also affected new housing activity and lending?
Yeah, I mean, it's Alan here, Michael. Perhaps a little bit. I think there's been probably more impact a little bit on some of the FHA, you know, mortgage qualification, you know, the reduction in the levels region by region. So I think it's taken had a slight impact with respect to that. And the markets that improved so quickly last year are probably the ones that are taking more of a breather right now. The ones that were a little bit more slow and steady are not having as slow a spring selling season. But also the other side of it is the areas where we're still getting great underlying support are those where the job creation has been the highest. I mean, obviously the Bay Area and Austin are two prime examples of that. So I think it's just a bit of a breathing room while people adjust to the new reality on some of the qualifying mortgage levels.
Okay. And my last question, how do you think higher interest rates may affect residential lot prices over time?
No question. I mean, people's buying the ability to buy as we go forward will be impacted. I mean, it's we're still very, very affordable at this point. I've stated in the past that I do believe that as rates get to, I hate to say normalized, I don't know what normalized is anymore, but getting, you know, if they start to move up a little bit, I think people will be making choices with respect to the housing product that they're looking for. And so their choices previously might have been a certain size house for a certain price. And it may well be that same price or slightly lower price and slightly smaller house ends up being the reality. We just need to get that housing continuum reestablished in the U.S. where we're moving people through from rental into first-time buying and into the housing ladder as we typically would look at it. And we still have a number of people still doubling up, and we just have to reestablish that housing continuum and move people through the process, which and when things become a bit more normalized after the jobs are created, which we had some good numbers this morning as early as that, I think we'll start to see that reestablishment. So I'm comfortable that people will still make those choices, but they'll be doing it for shelter reasons, not for any other reason.
So looking at the overall components, you know, if for a given monthly payment, you know, as borrowing costs go up, you have servicing costs, building costs, taxes, et cetera, all being relatively fixed, does that mean that land becomes the biggest potential outlet for the impact of higher rates to be felt?
Land typically is the residual in most cases, market by market, without question. I mean, construction costs in most markets are somewhat similar, and other things like that. But I'm not as concerned. I mean, land is where you make a lot of money in those things, but you can also build, as I say, smaller product which addresses that, and you can still residual. And the key thing is to make sure that you're developing land and lots to fit what that market is. That's the art of our business. And so I'm not too concerned with respect to that, albeit it will become more challenging. But I mean, bear in mind, rental costs in most of the markets in the US right now are the same as what that rolled up homeownership cost is that you were just referring to.
Great, thanks very much.
Thank you.
The next question is from Robert Wettenhall of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good morning. This is Colin filling in for Bob. Thanks for taking my question. How should we think about the pace of community count development and expectations for ASP performance in the U.S. and Canada?
Which one, sorry? Sorry, Colin, repeat that again. I just missed it.
So how should we think about the pace of community count development and expectations for ASP performance in the U.S. and Canada?
Yeah, so this is Craig. In terms of community count, as I mentioned, we would expect to see sort of a net 4 come on by the end of the year. That was our original guidance. So we'd go from the 53 we're at now to the 57. In terms of average sales price, as you said, it obviously is going to depend on the overall all mix. Certainly, we have seen an increase in our average sales price, particularly if you look at our backlog, you will have seen the value have gone up fairly materially. A lot of that's certainly driven by you're seeing it in both Canada and the U.S. In the U.S., a lot of it is certainly you're seeing it in California, particularly in the north, and that's a combination of increased margin, but also higher average sales price in those markets.
I mean, giving a quick example, I mean, some of the homes that we sold, for instance, Colin, in Playa Vista, when we just launched it in February there, the average pricing of the housing that we just released there was $1.9 million. So obviously that takes the average up substantially, and a lot of our product up in Northern California is obviously in that $1 million plus range as well. So it's the average ASP has gone up, most of it on product mix. It's tough to go apples to apples year to year, but for some of the lands that we have, that's the appropriate product to build on it. Albeit we do try and go across the spectrum for different types of housing, but those lands are such good locations that it befits that type of house product.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. The next question is from Rick Murray of Midwest Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Just a couple of quick questions, and I apologize if you've already covered this, but X the big commercial gain in the quarter, it looks like the results were about break even and down a bit from last year. And I was just curious, what was this in line with your expectations, and if not, what drove that? And then the second question I had was, what was the driver of the big decline in margins on the land sales versus last year? Thanks.
I'll deal with the first part, Rick. It's just, I mean, I think just year over year, I mean, we had, I mean, a couple of small things. We had some gain recognitions on some jobs that closed out at the first part of last year, which, first quarter is always a slower quarter, as you know, so things have tend to be magnified somewhat and are not representative of the balance of the year in any years that we've been doing this. But the other thing, Canadian dollar moved down a bit over the course, you know, when you compare with the previous year. So we do have some FX currency slide with respect to that, where it moved down to probably 90, 91 cents through that quarter versus close to a dollar, I think it was in the prior year quarter. So there is some fluctuation with respect to that. And so the second point was...
Yeah, so this is Craig. In terms of the land gross margin, the percentage wasn't that material. Obviously, we went from 54 to 48%. There was a pretty meaningful increase in Central and Eastern. And I'm reading off of page 30 of the corporate profile, if you had it in front of you. Canada went from 60% down to 53%, and that was really a combination of volume and some mix. As we talked about before, there's a slightly lower margin on our sales of lots in Edmonton. I think Alan talked about the sort of future of the lots.
Yeah, I think when you look at, because of the variability on the different margins, as I touched on earlier in the call, it's north of 50% in Calgary, north 40 to 50 in Edmonton, and then most of the other regions are between 25 and 35. So obviously the blended weighted average comes out depending on where the lots are being sold in a particular quarter. So I'm comfortable that those levels that I'm referring to are still consistent, if not actually increasing in some of the areas. And so really it just depends where we sell the lots in that particular quarter.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from Will Rando of Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my follow-up. I was just curious, when I was looking in your corporate profile, I haven't seen necessarily the undiscounted cash flow update. Where does that stand? Has that moved at all in the last year or so?
This is Craig. As you know, we don't update that on a quarterly basis. We only update it annually. We did update it at the end of last year during our February call, and it was at $5.5 billion.
Got it. Okay. I was just curious because I didn't see it in there, but maybe I missed it. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks, Will.
The next question is from Alex Avery of CIBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Alan, earlier in the call you mentioned, I guess in the context of the U.S. operations reaching a level equal to Canada by 2015, you also mentioned the idea of a normalized level of business in the U.S. So I was just wondering if you could put some parameters around that.
Morning, Alex. I think I was just trying to give the context that even once we get to the level in 2015 where we think our U.S. operations will equal where we've been in Canada up to this point, was that not to think that was us at full operating capacity. I still think we've got room to grow just even within our existing stuff without really doing a whole bunch more. So it wasn't, if we thought we were going to be doing, say, 500 homes in most of our areas in the U.S. as a normalized level for each of the regions, what I'm suggesting is we're not going to be at those levels by the end of 2015, yet we will still be at Canadian levels approximating the Canadian profitability. That's all I was trying to say.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
There are no more questions at this time. I'll now hand the call back over to Alan Norris for closing comments.
Thanks very much, operator. Really appreciate everybody's interest and support on the call, and we'll chat with many of you at the various conferences that Craig referred to earlier on, and obviously at our next quarterly call. Thanks very much indeed.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating, and have a pleasant day.